Good morning. Welcome to In and Around the House on B105. Tony Works is out today, and Alex and I will be holding down the fort today. So good morning, Alex.
Good morning, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing great. So it's great to hear your voice today. And boy, we woke up, and it feels pretty good out there today right now. Wasn't too bad outside.
It's cold for me.
Is it cold for you?
Oh, my gosh. It is so cold. What happened to the nice weather?
I don't know. I do want to give a not really a shout-out, because I'm really upset with Punxsutawney Phil. So if you remember, about a month ago today, you know, he came out and he had said, I guess he had seen his shadow, so he said there were six more, or we were going to have an early spring.
Mm-hmm, yep.
Well, it started to feel like that, but I'll tell you what, I think we're due for some changes early in next week.
No, I think you're right. And the weather, it always does this. We tend to get really nice and comfortable with the, it looks like it's going to start warming up, and people start getting excited about everything. And, well, and then it starts getting cold, and then, I don't know, it's just, it's different because how does that work with, well, I think with you working, you're out there doing landscaping and everything else like that, you know, when it starts getting cold, I've worked in the cold.
Yeah.
And it's terrible. Your hands get numb.
You know, your body gets used to temperature. So early this week, we were in the 60s. Man, did it feel really good. And then you get that wind and things cool down, but it you start to get used to the little bit warmer, and then all of a sudden we have one of these cold spells again, because I think the good news is they backed a lot of the snow off. So originally we were talking 5 to 8 inches. According to Channel 5, they're calling 1 to 2, mm-hmm. but it's those cold temperatures that are coming, and you just, you know, you kind of get used to 60, and then here comes the cold. So it does. It you got to bundle up. You got to do what you can do to get warm and stay warm, and then hope the sun comes out. Because if it's still 35, 40 degrees and the sun's out, it's not bad. So, like, even today at the station, it's 38 degrees right now. To me, that wasn't bad, but I'm outside a lot.
Yeah.
So if maybe somebody who's inside a little bit more, it might bother them. But, you know, as of right now, if you're just waking up and you're grabbing your favorite cup of coffee and tuning in, first of all, thank you. We love our listeners, and without you guys, we sure couldn't do this. So, you know, if you want to be a part of our program, you can always give us a call here, 749-B105. A great way to stay in touch with us is our Facebook page.
Yep.
So, and a lot of people have been doing that, and we're going to talk about some things that are posted out there. And also, we've got What Plant Is It? So, you still have time to get to our Facebook page, check out what Tony posted, and see if you can identify what we're going to talk about in the 7 o'clock hour. We've got a couple great guests in today. So we've got Todd Batens from Baton Nursery coming in around 7 o'clock. I think you'll really like that, Alex. He's a wealth of knowledge and really knows plants.
No, I'm actually really excited for him to come in here. And just, I like this show because I learned so much. I'm a young guy, Bob. I'm 25 years old.
Right.
And you've been in this business for such a long time. You're a wealth of knowledge yourself. But I love coming in here and just learning about all the different type of plants, all the different type of landscaping we're talking about. I just love coming in here and just learning all about it. And I love the guests that come in here because they're a wealth of knowledge as well.
Exactly. Yeah. And so speaking of guests, we also have Jason from Herman Services coming in the 8 o'clock hour. You know, and I've got some questions for him because I don't know if you've seen it or not, but there is a shower head out there. I think it's by Moen, where you can get an app for your phone so you can sit in your bed, punch up Start My Shower on your app and set the temperature so the water gets to that point so it's already hot before you climb in. You know, I know this is your first world problems, but look at how the technology has changed. I can't wait to talk to Jason about some of the things that are out there right now.
Unbelievable. That sounds right up my alley, actually.
Yeah. You know, I'm not a plumber by trade by any means whatsoever. So having an expert like that helps. But I mean, technology in general, You wouldn't think, as I mean, it's gone into toilets, it's gone into shower heads. I mean, technology's really come a long way, even with just the basic things in our house.
No, you know? Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And I just have to agree with you. Yeah,
yeah, I think it'll be fun. So we got those great guests coming in, so we want you to stay put with that. But also last week, Tony and I did a lot of talk about foliages, you know, so I know that there's some things we're going to bring back up and talk about that, because we had actually planned a whole show almost on foliages.
Mm.
So today in the 6 and the 7 o'clock hour, we're really going to hammer one, kind of some of the things we've already talked about, but really expand on those. And then also when Todd gets in, especially, we're going to hit on shrub foliages, perennial foliages, there's a lot out there that maybe doesn't have a flower, but it's still absolutely beautiful.
Actually, you know, with that thought, can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
So I told my mom that I would be talking a little bit, and she said, I have a question, and I need to go back with an answer.
Well, good morning, Mrs. Furman. So I got to say good morning to her.
So my mom, she didn't cut back this year, or in the fall or anything like that. And she didn't cut back her knockout roses or okay. any decorative grasses. When should she cut back now?
Well,
and about how far do you think?
What a great question, because I'm sure she's not the only one out there who hasn't done that yet, because it was a pretty cold winter. You know, I was thinking hopefully we'd have some time to get to some of those things. And Tony and I will even, and you may have heard us on the show, kind of banter back and forth on when we're supposed to cut grasses, when we're supposed to cut roses. But he and I are pretty much in agreement on the roses. So sometime in this month, before really everything kind of gets alive and you start to see leaf buds, she wants to cut her knockout roses back to about a foot high off the ground.
Okay.
She may cut off 2 to 3 feet of growth. You know, and people kind of get scared. But by the time you cut it back and then they rejuvenate, the new foliage is healthier, the flowers are healthier, more abundant, and she'll really have a great, healthy plant. So those knockout roses, go ahead and give them a haircut right now.
Okay.
Just go ahead and do it. It's a little cold this week, so she may not get to it, but today would be fine, or any time in the next couple weeks.
Okay.
And as far as ornamental grasses, any time again on those. Tony and I disagree on this. I like to cut some of mine in the fall because I like them nice and clean. Tony's like, no, I want to leave the foliage. I want to leave it, and then I'm going to cut it in the spring. And the truth is, there is not a wrong answer on that. But if you haven't done it, she should go ahead and cut those. And depending on the variety, it'll be cut anywhere between 6 inches and 12 inches off the ground.
Okay.
Now, there's a really cool trick. I don't know how big her grasses are. Do you know if they're really tall?
I want to say maybe like 3-4 feet.
Okay, 3-4 feet. So what you can do, if you can take a cup, either one of those ratchet straps that you hook stuff on trailers to, or maybe you strap something on the top of your car, and they're basically, they look like a seat belt with a ratchet to them,
yeah.
and two little hooks. So you can hook those, kind of hook some of that together and pull it real tight so the grass is all smushed together. So it's basically sticking straight up and down, and you got it tied nice and tight. So when you cut it, all the grass clipping is in one big pile. So it's really easy to clean up. Does that make sense?
That's a great idea.
Or if you can do the old-fashioned way and do Kentucky Chrome. You know what Kentucky Chrome is, being younger? That's duct tape. We call that Kentucky Chrome. And take your duct tape and actually wrap duct tape around them and then cut your grass off at a foot. Once again, then everything's nice and neat. Now, you probably have never done this, but your mom has, and she'll tell you, when you cut grasses, it's messy sometimes. So if you can do one of those two tips or take a string and tie it up, and then go ahead and cut your grasses, you'll be amazed how much better and cleaner everything is. And it also gets you done a lot faster.
Okay, so this might be actually a dumb question. We're cutting back the knockout roses. We're cutting back our decorative grasses. Is that because the growth is dead because of the winter? Or is that because we're trying to get new growth for the spring?
Yes and yes and no. So there's three answers there. So let's start with the grasses.
Okay.
Everything's dead. It's all rejuvenating from the base.
Okay.
So we're going to remove all the old stuff. That way the new stuff doesn't have to fight through. Okay. So it has a much easier time getting up, stretching towards the sunlight. So it starts to get everything that it needs in the spring. It'll be much happier and much healthier. On your knockout roses, they'll continue to grow. So if you leave them right now and you don't trim them, what'll happen is they'll stretch even further. So if you have a 2-foot-tall plant of a knockout rose, it's 2 feet tall. By the time summer hits, if you don't trim it, it'll be 4 to 5 foot tall because they really have a lot of growth. But if you cut it down to a foot and then it grows, now you're back to 2 to 3 foot tall. So the bush stays nice and contained and kind of fit.
So, okay, so it's a nice balance of keeping it contained, like you said, and also letting that new growth come in
right.
for the up and coming.
Yeah, because on a knockout rose, if your mom leaves it, all the bottom will be dead. And a lot of people have done this where they didn't cut their knockout rose and the new growth comes out. And that's generally on top. And then it's shading everything that's down underneath, so it stays thin. So basically, it looks like kind of it's got a crop, you know, a haircut real high. You know, it's all the hair sticking straight up, and there's nothing underneath.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of looks half dead. So then also, you don't get as abundance of flower. So for your mom's sake, let's go ahead and cut those roses anytime in the next 2 weeks.
All right. Well, thank you.
And then there's grasses. So hopefully that helps your mom out quite
Absolutely.
A bit.
Thank you so much.
So, but, you know, we've got a great show today. And I am real excited because I want to get back to these foliages. Tony and I just ran out of time last week about talking about foliage plants. We had mentioned caladiums. We had mentioned coleus. We had mentioned heuchera. And we really didn't get in depth into the heuchera and into the coleus. But we're going to revisit that. And if you want to be a part of it, or you have something that you like, a perennial that you love, foliage or shrubs, you know, you can hit us up on our Facebook page, call in, you know, add to our conversations because we're real excited about that. And yeah, we've got some cold weather coming in, but you know, spring is 18 days away.
Unbelievable.
18 days.
Well, I hope it sure warms up within the 18 days.
I think it will. I think it will. When you look out at the long-term forecast, days are getting a little longer. You know what next week is, don't you?
Yeah, it's spring forward.
Spring forward, daylight saving. So, you know, we're going to pick up that extra hour at night. We lose a little bit in the morning, and I don't know how that affects you, but it affects my sleep just a little bit.
Me too.
So, and I'm not anxious about the following week, which I think is the 16th, you know, because it'll change on the 9th. We'll do the show, though, but the time won't change. I don't think that changes Saturday night.
I think so.
So it's the next week when all of a sudden we're up even an hour earlier than normal. I don't know how that's going to work out. So, but we're going to take a quick break. And like I said, if you want to be a part of our conversation, give us a call at 749-B105. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House. Tony is out today. Like I said earlier, he might call in. So let's hope he does. He's out. I'm not going to tell you where he's at because if he gets a chance to call, he can tell us. It's a pretty exciting what he's doing with his wife.
Yeah, Gina. I think it's really cool.
Should be fun. But also, already getting here a few minutes early, and I'm glad he did, is our good friend Todd Baton from Baton's Nursery. Good morning, Todd. How are you?
How you guys doing?
We're doing great. Everything good with you?
Yeah.
So what's going on around the garden center?
Well, I'm glad it's a little warm today, but going back into the cold, that's going to be kind of a different thing. But, you know, the garden center, we're getting pretty wound up. Like our hopped up baseballs now, we're getting wound up pretty tight.
It's exciting this time of year around the garden center, isn't it?
Yep. Since we're growers, we've been going nonstop all the way since Christmas break. But it really never ends when you're a grower.
No, it doesn't. That's one nice thing. We've been having a lot of the annuals in and the hanging baskets, and it's nice to see. And I don't know about you, but I love the smell of the fresh dirt. You know, you get it out of the bag and it's in a pile. I just love that smell.
Well, I like in the morning when you go in and you open up the houses first thing in the morning, you really can't smell oxygen, but it smells
fresh.
Fresh.
It smells really fresh. Yep. And, you know, that's something because you and I are kind of plant nerds. You know, we really are. Terribly. We enjoy plants. We enjoy, you know, all the different colors. And that's one reason why I really asked you to come in, and I'm glad you did. But why don't you tell our listeners about Baton's Nursery, a little of the history, because there's really a lot of history to it. Tell us a little bit about your company.
Well, We started 28 years ago. My dad started it as a hobby and kind of a retirement thing. He was in the floor covering business, and when he turned 50, he said, "Daggone, I'm going to do what the heck I wanted to do all my life before I get too old." And so he always had cuttings and always had things going in the backyard. We had a great garden in the backyard, and it was just a lot of fun. So I was kind of acclimated to that all my life. Then we bought a farm. You know, I have three other brothers and a sister, so we had a place to go all the time. I grew tobacco and corn, and we had cattle and that kind of thing. But Dad was always growing something. He was raised on a dairy farm in Wisconsin, so he was always growing something. But he wanted to grow greenhouse plants.
Sure, plants, shrubs.
His first paying job was in a greenhouse to get away from the farm a little bit, so he had something, you know, some spending money.
So he was out working for someone.
Yep.
Okay.
And that was just right down the street from his farm up in Green Bay, Wisconsin. But anyways, so Dad started with one house, and my brother was coming out of high school. He went with him. I'd already had a degree in agronomy from UK, so I had a business going, and lawn care business before everybody got into
it. Sure.
And then so the constant progression of growing this, growing that, it's always a challenge because mm-hmm. you're learning something new. You're trying to grow something different, and that's always cool.
Yeah.
But now we've evolved to 17 greenhouses. We grow just about anything you can think of that will grow in our area.
Right.
And we're always looking for something else to grow. Fruit trees, all your shades, all your very best shrubs. Our annual selection can't be beat. The best hanging
yeah,
baskets.
You guys
I mean,
do
I don't want to make a big commercial, but we grow some killer stuff.
But you guys, and I've been to your greenhouse, and I've seen your facility. It's a great facility. It's easy to navigate. You got friendly workers and employees. You got a great selection out there on Frogtown Road. And like you said, you've been there 28 years. And what's, you know, kind of exciting, because I'm a third generation, is your son is actually going to be coming into the business once he graduates from UK. So,
yep.
You know, you guys got a lot going on, and it's kind of exciting. But hang on to that thought. So when we come back out of the break, though, Todd and I are going to really start to dig into some of the coleus, because he's a grower as well. So he loves some of this plants, and he's got some favorites. So if you want to be part of our conversation, definitely check us out on Facebook, In and Around the House, or you can call us at 749-B105. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House on B105 with Tony Works. Tony is out today, and I am hosting with Alex. I'm Bob Bard. And also our good friend Todd Baton is sitting in with us today. And when we left you on the commercial break, we started to talk about coleus. Now, I love coleus. I don't know about you. I think they're a cool, cool plant.
And it's so easy. It's always one of the easiest plants to grow. Once it's up and growing, it's almost on cruise control.
It really is, isn't it? And mm-hmm. There's so many different varieties. It's actually quite crazy. I mean, there's more out there than really anybody could even know.
You've got texture. Mm-hmm. You've got color. You got combo colors.
Yep.
You got dappled little specks on them. You got all kinds of different things. But the textures of them, you can have the Kong coleus almost looks like a big, huge hosta.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got some of the little fine-leafed ones that almost looks like a Japanese maple leaf.
And that's what makes it really great. So let's go back to the Kong coleus ones specifically. Now, a couple of ones we like to grow. We grow Kong red and Kong rose. And I love just that they get some size and that they'll grow in some parts sunned all the way to the shade, and yet you get all that vibrant color.
Yep.
That's something I love about them.
That's the whole thing about Kong is that, you know, once it gets up and growing, the root system is so deep that it never wilts down, and it'll take the sun or the shade. So it is, you know, it's easy to plant. And as long as you can get a little bit of water to get it established, you're probably not going to have to water that very much the rest of the year. And a little bit of fertilizer in the very beginning goes a long way.
I agree.
Is not one that is a very needy plant. Once it gets going, you've got it for the rest of the year. And, you know, some of the cool ones that are coming on, I was browsing our benches last night looking before we came over, just doing a little, you know, show prep.
Sure.
And there's one that we're growing now, Red Hot Ignition,
mm-hmm.
which is a cool one.
That is a very neat
plant. That's really going to be neat. The other one that I, Hot Dragon's Breath or Dragon's mm-hmm. Breath, coleus is another really neat one. It's going to have foliage, and it's going to have some flower on the top, but mostly a foliage plant.
Right, and that's it. And with the coleus, one thing we need to consider is there are different size coleus. There's different size leaves to the coleus. There's different size heights to the coleus. And as a consumer, when our customers come into the garden center and they talk to people like you and I, we always are educating them. But you know, to our listeners, sometimes they're on their own, and they really need to look at those tags and take a look, because some coleus can get up to 3 feet tall, you know, or even they might stretch a little further,
right.
And then you've got some that are 12 to 18 inches. Like Broad Street is a small one Tony I know really likes,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to be 12 to 18 inches tall, but it's going to spread 30 to 36 inches, so it's going to have some size to it.
Reading those tags is really important, because some of the coleus are meant to go in combo containers, you know, in a hanging basket, in a nice big container, just for the foliage and, you know, the look. But the other thing is that you can't take a big Kong and put it in a combo container unless you want it to take up the whole entire thing, because of the small size and the small stature or the little bit of limited leaf area. The combo part of that coleus, all of the coleus, since it's a large plant-based and the different series lends himself to do anything, stand alone on its own, put a bed full, or in combination planters.
You're 100% plant. Correct. And what Todd is talking about is specifically with the Kong coleus, being a bigger coleus, if you put that in a small container, it's going to overpower anything that you put into that. But if you put it into a large container or if you have it in a landscape bed as kind of a backdrop with layering, it really can add just an incredible spice of color and foliage and really brighten up some shady areas specifically.
Yep.
So, you know, another one that Tony really likes, and I've never personally used this one. I don't know if you've had any experience with it. It's called Wedding Train, and it's more of a spreading trailer. It only gets 10 to 12 inches, but it's going to spread 3 feet wide, and it's a real small leaf.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one. The spreaders are kind of hard to grow sometimes, especially, you know, in the presentation of a, you know, the pot or the 6-inch pot that we grow it in or that kind of thing. But a white one would be really a neat thing to have.
Yeah, and then something that I love about the coleus and why we're really bringing it up is because there are hundreds and hundreds of varieties. Now, sometimes they'll all look very similar. But, for example, the Kong Jr., the leaf is 30% smaller than the Kong itself. So that kind of makes a nice texture and a nice foliage, and it adds some different colors to your landscape or into your pots. So is there any other specific varieties that you maybe really lean towards? Do you like more of the limey color ones, or do you like the darker, more burgundy ones?
I personally kind of like the bronze with the kind of chartreuse or lemon yellowed
on the outside.
Right.
Yeah.
Either the veining is always prominent on it, or it's the outer edges that are more prominent on
those.
Yeah,
they really are pretty, aren't they?
Yep.
Yeah, they really add a lot. And once again, you just got to make sure that you put this in the right place. Because if you're going to put it in a container, use a smaller one.
Right.
If you're going to put it out in the yard, you know, let's go with some of the larger ones.
If you can't find a coleus that you like, you're not even looking.
And there are some that'll take sun, which is really kind of nice that you can put out there. Now, I don't know about you, but I found if you put them in 100% all day western sun or all day sun, you know, you definitely got to keep up with the watering just a little bit.
For sure.
You know, they'll wilt, but even a little, they'll wilt a little bit and then they're fine after that. If you, as long as you put water on them.
I've never seen a coleus just crash and burn once it does have an established root system, which means watering at the beginning, get it off to a good start, hit it with a little fertilizer. I've never seen them crash and burn that they couldn't come back.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's definitely a few varieties that I personally like. And one that we're growing called Electric Lime. And it is a really unique, that lighter, almost looks yellow from a distance, but it's kind of got the yellow with the green veining through it. It's really a pretty one. Something a little different. But, you know, if you get to Baton's Nursery and some of our other local leaders or stop by Tony's place, you know, you're going to find some of these specialty coleus that you're just not going to find in other places.
I tell you what, the landscapers have figured it out, too. Mm-hmm. They're using coleus in a big way on their landscape beds just because they can integrate a new color in there and work off of those colors. Landscapers are getting really sophisticated in their choices, and they're starting to plan now and do a lot of different things. So,
yeah, and hang on to that. I got a question for you when we come out of the break. But when we come back, I have a question for Todd about spacing on some of these coleus. And also, we're going to continue our talk into some different annuals that add some cool foliages. If you have one that you really like and you used in the past, you can give us a call or shoot us a message on Facebook. And you know, we'd love to hear from you. So stick with us. You're listening to B105 In and Around the House. We'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House. And hope you've enjoyed our conversation with Todd Baton from Baton's Nursery. And we've been talking about coleus and foliage colors. We're going to take a short break just for a second from that. And Mike called in and he wanted to talk about crabgrass prevention. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Hi, we're doing great, buddy. What can we do for you?
So I always kind of struggle with timing here. So I want to seed and defetch and do crabgrass preventer this year in the spring. You know, I know not to do the seeding and the crabgrass preventer, you know, close in timing, but I was wondering if you could give me a good idea on kind of timing to do those three things. And I know the crabgrass preventer's got a, somewhat of a short window to be really effective. So I'm kind of hoping you could help me pinpoint that.
Well, first of all, there is a product out there, and Todd, I don't know if you've ever used this, Tupersand, that is a crabgrass prevention that you can put down with grass seed. So there is a product out there. If you want it to dethatch and you want it to put your grass seed down, you could do the Tupersand. I think it's made by Greenview, I think still carries it.
Yep.
I don't know if you know any other topics.
It is the one and only that you can do.
It is the only one. Now, you're going to pay a lot more for it than you would for regular crabgrass control, but it gives you the ability to have some weed and or some crabgrass prevention while you're trying to grow grass. So there is that possibility. Now, if you don't want to go that route, you can go ahead and dethatch, put your grass seed down, but you really got to mow it at least once or twice. And then you can put your crabgrass control down. Now, one nice thing about the Fertilome three-step is with prodiamine, it can be put down at a later stage and still help with your crabgrass prevention. So your timing is, if you can do your seed as soon as possible, as soon as the yard's dry enough to do it, go ahead and get that down. And as soon as that's up and mowable, then you can come back with your crabgrass prevention. So.
Okay, so the crabgrass prevention, you mow your yard once or twice, and then that's kind of the timing trigger?
That's usually what I do. Todd, do you have something that you recommend?
No, that's pretty much it. The main thing would be fertilize the grass that's there. You're also going to be fertilizing any crabgrass that's going to be coming up. But be prepared to do it again in the fall somewhat. But any kind of population of the good grass that you get is going to be much more beneficial than having a yard full of crabgrass. So those two compete for one another, but if you have a mono stand of the good grass that you want, and then you're, you know, kind of hitting at the crabgrass as it's coming with a little bit over the top, that would be the only way that you're really going to be able to knock it out.
Yeah,
it's one of the tougher questions of all that we get all the time, but that's the way to do it. Think two seasons instead of one, because you're never going to get 100% stand of grass the first time, especially if you're going to dethatch.
Yeah. Mike, let me ask you a question. How good is your lawn right now? How thick is your grass that you have?
I would say it's well above average.
Okay.
Really good.
Do you have a crabgrass issue, or are you just trying to make sure you prevent it from becoming a crabgrass issue?
I'm trying to prevent. Last year, I completely skipped this step and had a little bit of an issue in one spot, but this year I want to prevent.
Okay, so you're already way ahead. You're really thinking ahead, and one thing I love about this show is our listeners are pretty smart, so you already kind of knew what the answer was. But, you know, go ahead and dethatch as soon as you're capable. I know we're going to cool down, so it's not going to be when it's real cold or there's a frost on your lawn, because that could really damage the turf. Get your grass seed down. And hopefully you can do that in the next 10 days to 14 days. And if that's the case, that kind of should put you towards the middle of end of April to put step one of the Fertilome three-step. And I think you'll still have pretty good control. And just like Todd said, by getting a thicker lawn, you're going to prevent as more crabgrass from germinating as possible. And it sounds like you're already in pretty good shape. So I think that's your timing. Grass seed, dethatch. Wait till you mow it at least once, and then you should be able to go in with your crabgrass preventer.
I've got one little question real quick.
Yeah.
If your lawn is really that good, why wouldn't you just go ahead and put the crabgrass control down with the fertilizer and then possibly put one more fertilizing down towards the middle to late spring and get everything on track for the fall? Dethatching in the springtime is never really a good thing, although it will come out of the ill repair, or that dethatcher is going to beat that lawn up terribly, and it's going to pull a lot of the grass out of the soil that's already there. If you've got at least 75% of the grass there, I would just go and start treating everything that you've got there, your population of grass there now. If it is that good, I would go ahead and fertilize it real well, do my weed control, and then prepare to do any more additions in the fall or late summer.
Yeah.
August, September.
And what's Todd saying is, since your lawn is still pretty thick, what you may want to do is just go ahead and just do the weed prevention and forget the grass seed step, unless you have bare spots. You don't really have a lot of bare spots, it sounds like.
No, I don't.
Yeah. So, and this Todd brings up a great point. What you may be better to do is go ahead and get that pre-emergent down. Go ahead and get that step down sometime middle of March. Forget the grass seed for now. If you have a couple small spots of crabgrass, there is a spray or two you can use and just do a little spot treatment, but that's going to be towards later in the year. And in the fall, really attack your grass seed and dethatch, because that would be the perfect time to go ahead and do that.
Okay, great.
So I hope that helps. Mike, we appreciate you listening and calling in.
All right, thanks, guys. Have a good weekend.
You too, buddy.
Thanks.
Have a good one.
Bye.
You know, that's one thing about this show. We have a chance to really share as much as we can with the listeners, because, you know, sometimes your neighbor will tell you to do something, you know, and it's like, it may not be the best idea, you know. And as soon as Mike said he had a thick lawn, you and I both triggered the same thing. It's like, okay, if it's already thick, do you really need grass seed?
Right. The timing is all off on that. But as long as he's got a fairly established lawn in the first place, why start doing it in the wrong season? Blink twice, and it is in the right season.
Exactly.
And then you've got your timing correct to, you know, add to your grass seed.
And it kind of brings up a couple things to thought when that call came in from Mike. My neighbor, Charlie, who I love dearly, his lawn's really pretty good. And he's like, hey, can you bring me home some grass seed? And I said, well, what's wrong with it? He goes, well, my front's a little thin. And I did look. He's got a couple thin spots in the front, but about 90% of his lawn is still really thick. So I'm like, Charlie, you don't have to do your whole lawn. The grass seed's not going to get in, not going to grow anyways, because it's not going to get any surface contact. So I wouldn't even worry too much about winter seed. We're just going to fix his spots and then get going on the fertilizer.
We're looking at our lawns at the worst time of year.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as it starts to green up and everything starts to thicken up, two blades are four, four is eight, eight, 16, and then everything is back to normal, and then you're thinking, oh, my gosh, I got to cut it again.
So I got a funny story to tell you, and you'll get a kick out of this, and I think the listeners will too. So I have a really good customer of mine who's using the Fertilome three-step. He loves it. And this is the second year in a row, and I'm not going to mention the name, but a big-name local company that goes around just fertilized yards already went and did his lawn by accident. They've been fired for 2 years. And last year they did it, and this year they've already come and put the pre-emergent down last week. So it's really early. So you know what they're doing. They're just out putting stuff down. It's not going to work. But the interesting thing was he called the company and said, hey, I use Fertilome three-step. I love my lawn. Everything's great. You just put this down. Am I going to have any issues? The person that he talked to said, all you got to do is water our product in for 2 weeks, and it'll already be disappeared and dissipate in the soil. So my point is, this company that's putting down a weed prevention, crabgrass and weed prevention, told him the product they're putting down is going to last 2 weeks. 2 weeks. Can you believe that?
No.
I mean, it's fascinating to me to think a product that's supposed to last 3 to 4 months, because that's what Fertilome's prodiamine in the first step does, and some of the other products out there last 3 to 4 months, that the product that he didn't pay for, but he would have, is going to give you 2 weeks of prevention, and you put it down at the end of February. It's going to do nothing.
Yeah. 2 weeks of anything on your lawn is going to do nothing.
Nothing. And even the fertilization, if it's only going to last 2 weeks, it's going to be used up. And with the cool temperatures, I don't think you're going to see much growth or really get any benefit whatsoever.
No. The whole month of March is the time where it's just sitting there kind of waiting to grow.
Yeah.
Everything that was stored last fall, that's why everybody's lawn looks great for about the first mow or two. Everything was stored last fall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the sugars and carbs in the root system pushes up. Oh, the lawn looks pretty good. You mow it two or three times and you wish that you had put that fertilizer down.
Exactly.
But if you do it, you know, right on time, you mentioned the forsythia.
Mm-hmm.
That's your indicator.
Is there another one you use?
Nope.
Forsythia, yeah, I like the forsythia.
Yeah. You can't miss it, and it's there every year. So that's
absolutely
your indicator.
So, well, Mike, thanks for the call. And we always encourage our listeners to call in. There's never a dumb question when it comes to this, because this is an industry that we learn something new every day. So, but when we come back, we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, we're going to touch on some other annual foliages. We're going to get away from the coleus for a little bit and talk about a few different ones. So stick with us. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. Tony is out today. Our good friend Todd Baton from Baton's Nursery is filling in with us. So, but we had a call. We want to go into foliages. But before we do, we had a phone call. Terry called and he wanted to talk about winter seeding. Good morning, Terry. How are you?
I'm fine. You?
Good. Thanks for calling in. What can we do for you?
I'm with, to make a long story short, I called you and Tony last year, right about at the break of the end of the season, the slit seed and seed.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, I did that, and I bought my seed from Jackson.
Okay.
Never had anything come up.
Okay.
So it's not like it came up and got bitten by frost and died off.
When did you put it down?
Oh, if I had to guess, I want to say it was right around October 20th, 25th, somewhere near that range.
All right. Well, here's the thing. You're probably, don't be shocked you didn't get any, because you shouldn't have had any seed growing yet. And the main reason was, if you remember back in November, it got really, really cold. So our ground temperatures cooled down really, really quick. So any growth would have been non-existent at that time. So, and we haven't warmed up enough to get that grass to grow. Now, I will say you probably lost a small percentage because of how wet things were. We actually probably got a little rot of some grass seed. But I would sit tight just for a little while. Do you have any seed left, or did you use every little bit of it?
I really, really overseeded. I mean, I went down, I think I bought, well, I got some shade mix from you, too. I want to say I put down 70 pounds per yard.
Okay. Well, what I would do is I would just sit tight just still for a little while longer. It's the ground temperature's got to warm up in order for the grass to grow. And how's the existing lawn that you have? How full do you think that is?
Well, it's decent, but that's what I was going to ask you is, now the backyard, I have two dogs. So
okay.
After I mowed it real short, slip seeded, and then all we had was rain for the last 3 months.
That didn't help any.
They had worn a bunch of spots. So I was actually going to go down to Jackson today to winter seed, and I was going to ask you if putting some straw down would help, or maybe get away from the fescue and maybe switch to a Kentucky.
No, I would definitely stick with the same seed. There's no doubt. You don't want to start mixing a bunch of seeds. Did you get the, you said you got a shade mix and then in some other, did you get the H2O? Because I know Tony loves the Fine Lawn H2O.
At that time, the only thing that was on it was Fine Lawn is what it said.
Okay, then that was probably that. That's probably exactly what that was. So what I would do is, and Todd, you can jump in here anytime, but if your spots are really small, I don't worry too much about strawing. Do you, when they're like little one-by-one spots?
No, I wouldn't do any straw.
Yeah, then yeah. With the dogs, if you want to try to do some straw just to try to keep the mud down, and that's just to keep the dogs clean, still just keep the straw as light as you can to do what you need to do with the dogs. But if you over-straw, you're actually going to prevent the seed, when it does start to germinate, it's going to try to fight through that straw, and you're going to have some issues. But I would...
Sunlight temperature, correct?
What's that?
I said the straw, the ground should be able to have sunlight reach the ground.
Yeah. Yes. Now, you got one good thing that's about ready to happen. We're supposed to get a little bit of snow. So if you're going to do any winter seeding, we always would recommend try to catch that last snowfall. And I think if you did that with the bare spots, I think you'll have fairly good success. But as far as the other seed, I wouldn't worry too much yet. You're going to lose a percentage, but I'll bet you still get some of it growing, and I bet you still get some growth. And then if you need to, you can always put a little starter fertilizer down in March as opposed to the weed prevention. Fertilome makes a really good new lawn starter, which will feed the existing lawn and the new seed. And then you can always come back with your weed prevention a little bit later in April.
Well, that answered my next question. So do not put any starter fertilizer down today, correct?
You can. It won't hurt anything.
Okay.
I would actually, I don't know to you, I like to put a starter fertilizer down.
Starter for sure, because you want to kick in the existing and also what is going to be coming up. You don't want it to be needy when it's really trying to get going. But the other thing, too, is that I think you're a little nervous in that always think of what Mother Nature does. Mother Nature seeds that plant. All the grass in the fall throws its seed everywhere. It sits all winter long in a dormant state, and the cold temperature of the soil is going to make it stay in a suspended state. Then when it starts to warm up, you know, soil temperature ranges 60, 65, 68, then it'll start to trigger germination. But Mother Nature doesn't winter seed. That was already done in the fall.
Right.
So don't get too nervous yet, because what will happen if you go and throw a whole bunch more seed on, it'll all start coming up in the springtime, and then you're going to have trouble because then you're going to have too much.
Yeah.
And then it'll all start dying out because it's too much population of grass.
Yeah, what I would do is I'd go get a little more seed, touch up those bare spots where the dogs are, because you probably lost some of that, And as far as everything else, just a good starter fertilizer, and then sit tight through May, and I think you'll be pleasantly surprised what comes up.
So do you actually think I will see some grass on the spot, say, like where I've split seeded?
Yes, I do. I definitely think you're going to see that. It's just we have not had the ground warm enough in order for that seed to germinate. And as soon as it warms up, if it's a cold March, you might not see it till April. If it's a warm March, you're going to see it a little bit earlier. It all depends on that soil temperature, how warm it gets, how fast, and then you'll get your germination.
When I used to teach turf science, I always said April 15th. It was an easy day to get the students to remember, you know, germination time for grass seed and crabgrass at the same time is always right around tax day.
Yeah, so you're in good shape, Terry. I just sit tight, get a little starter fertilizer, and you should be great.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for calling in, buddy. Have a good day. You know, that's a great question because this year, you know, we talked about winter seeding on the air, Tony and I, but we kept being cautious. Hey, it's not time. It's too wet. You know, if you didn't get it down early and you threw it in January and then we had 6 inches of rain, it was moving. Mm-hmm. So at this point, I would think maybe not as much called winter seeding, even though we still have 18 days of winter. It's really more we're kind of getting into spring seeding at this point. So I think we're in pretty good shape. But before that call, you know, we wanted to get into some of the other foliages, and we got to take a quick break. So when we come back, we're going to dig into some foliages. I know Todd's got a few favorites. I've got some. So stick with us, and we'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House. You're just waking up with us. It's starting to get a little bit light out there, which is kind of nice today. We're going to go for a high of 46 degrees. Looks like it's going to be cloudy. They're still calling for a chance of snow tomorrow. Maybe 1 to 2 inches is what they're saying right now. Some spots might get up to 3, but the way the ground's pretty warm, I don't think it's going to stick around for too long, but we are going to cool down next week. So Punxsutawney Phil was wrong again. So he's wrong 61% of the time, and I think we just upped his percentage to be he's wrong even more. So maybe we shouldn't take our advice on spring from a rodent. So what do you think, Todd? So, but when we get into the break, we were talking about foliages. And I know you've got some that you really like. And when we talk about perennials, what are some of the foliages that if a customer came into your store at Baton's Nursery and said, hey, I'm looking for something really interesting, what would you steer them to?
Well, we mentioned it off air, but the one we really like is Persian Shield.
Yes.
Absolutely. Tough as nails, easy. Mm-hmm. A different type of foliage, a silver kind of metallic part of the leaf, hence the shield part.
Mm-hmm.
You've got
I love this plant.
You've got kind of a metallic blue.
Mm-hmm.
You got a little bit of a sheen to the leaf, but that thing is almost indestructible.
Yeah, I love that plant. It gets a little size to it, but it's not totally out of control. Looks good in larger containers, but really adds some interest. We always talk about thrillers, spillers, and fillers. I'd say that's a thriller because it really has got a cool foliage to it.
Yep.
So I love that one.
You do have to give it its space, so you're right.
You absolutely do. So, you know, another one, and it's an annual that I really like, and I want to go back and talk about, is Perilla Magilla. So it kind of looks like a small leaf coleus. It does get pretty large,
but if
you need something for full sun and you want an interesting foliage with the burgundy and the purple, and it does get that little flower seed kind of later on in the season. But Perilla Magilla is a pretty easy one to grow.
That's another one. You get it established, hit it with a little fertilizer, and it's on cruise control too.
Yeah, just needs a little water here and there. But it's a great plant if you're a low-maintenance gardener and you want a good foliage. We talked about the coleuses. This looks like a coleus, but it's not. It's always misidentified.
Yeah.
But it can handle
full sun. A lot of your foliage plants like the shade. So there are, you know, we struggle to have a full sun foliage kind of plant, but this would be the one.
This will do it. Now, I've had some of these at my house. My wife has planted. She always does our pots. I'm not allowed to do our pots
anymore.
Me neither. So my wife does them. But she's
isn't that interesting?
It is interesting. She thinks I don't know what I'm doing. But Elizabeth, I know you do a great job, so I don't want to put her down because she does an amazing job growing our flowers. But we've put it in our own containers, and there's times where we're maybe gone for a long weekend, and it wilts, and it looks like it should be dead. And you just hit it with water, and that thing stands up real quick and looks perfect the next day.
Yep.
So it's a great plant to use.
Container plants, you know, if something does fizzle out on you, pop it out, put a new one in.
Mm-hmm.
It's never too late, until we get way into the summertime.
Until we're sold out.
Until we're sold out.
Yeah, until we're sold out. So, you know, and, you know, people will get their annuals. You know, we don't want to get these till, the old way is till Mother's Day. You know, we want to wait till Mother's Day. But a lot of these annuals, not just the foliage ones we're talking about, some of them can handle a little cooler temperatures.
Right.
Which is kind of nice.
We try to get them ready, you know, acclimated to the colder temperatures for the people who want to put them out early.
Yeah.
A lot of times they may not get stung, but they're really not going to get off to a good start. But everybody wants to get the best selection.
Right. So and, I suggest get the best selection, but don't plant them yet. Move them in and out, kind of protect them, you know, and get your annuals that way. Now let's switch gears to perennials.
All right.
So once again, a consumer. I'm coming at you. I'm like, hey Todd, how you doing, man? I'm looking for kind of a good foliage perennial. I don't want to plant it every year. I want it to come back. Where are you steering me?
Some of my favorites are going to be, you know, we talked about the Heuchera.
Yep.
Heucherella. My son's learning that plant now, and he loves it.
It's a good one.
It's a good one because here's the thing about that. You've got all different types of leaf textures. Yes. Again, you've got a leaf that's kind of almost rounded and slightly lobey mm-hmm. with the Heucheras. But then you've got the Heucherellas and the Terriellas,
yep.
which are all in the same family, but you've got a lot more cut leaf to it.
Right.
You've got veining. You've got a different look. You've got all different types of things
ruffles.
In the same yes. family of plants.
Yep.
And they're just really tough once you get them established.
And what we're talking about, for the listeners that maybe don't know the Heuchera, is Corabels. That's kind of their common name.
Right.
You know, when you go in there, you're getting a Corabel. That's what we're talking about. You know, one that I love is called Citronella, the lime color. I don't know why I tend to lean towards these yellows and bright colors, but I love the Citronella. I just love that foliage. I think that's a pretty one that's out there.
Yep. You got to keep that one in some shade, though, because it'll get burnt edges and that kind of thing. But most of the coral bells want some shade, especially a little bit of afternoon shade. That yeah. sun will ding them a little bit, or they won't grow really well. But out in nature, they're understory plants underneath big trees. So they are not very needy. Again, understory trees don't need a lot of water once they're established, don't need a lot of fertilizer because they're competing. But they're happy wherever they're going to be.
Do you
use
find
them in
that,
containers, too.
Do you find if they're in a real wet area, sometimes they struggle? Do they like to be well-drained?
Yeah, they're probably going to be dead.
Yeah, you want to go ahead and get them in a well-drained area. You know, another one that I really like is Silver Scrolls because it's got the burgundy
yeah.
with the silver in the leaf.
Yep.
I just love that coloring. And I think it's a beautiful plant when you mix it with some of the original almost that everybody knows, the Palace Purple Corabel. When you mix some of these foliages together, even though they're all in the same family, I think as a design, that really makes a pretty, pretty look.
There's so many colors of that in the Heuchera, in the coral bells, the foam flowers,
mm-hmm.
the Heucherellas. You do get some flower, especially with the foam flowers. They are, they keep coming out with so many really nice flower combinations. You know, so you've got the foliage, you've got the flower. But all of these things are in the design. You know, how do I want to set this up? That's
yeah.
the whole thing. Some series of plants and some of the species, you only get one or two or maybe just, you know, one look at this plant. You could go through the whole bench of all the coral bells and just see all different
hundreds.
Types of colors.
And there's yeah. hundreds and hundreds of
which
varieties.
Makes it a challenge for us.
Right.
We're gonna give you the best offerings that we can that are the toughest out there.
Right.
But there are so many for us to choose from, too, that, you know.
So there's some other ones that I like, though, if we get away on foliages from the coral bells. I love the Jack Frost Brunaria, or Brunera,
yeah.
depending on how you want to pronounce it. But I love that plant. It has a green foliage with that kind of,
pewter.
Once again, silver foliage.
Yeah, kind of pewter foliage.
Pewter color mm-hmm. in the leaves. And then the one get that blue flower, which is very unique. And it'll grow in some shade, too. So I tend to love that one. Is there any other ones that you really, really tend to lean towards?
Well, the Brunaria is a really good one. I mean, that's... Those are your combinations for the shade, but if you variegated Solomon seal.
Oh, yeah.
Tough as nails. I mean, we were up at the Ball Seed Trials 2 years ago when my other son was up there on an internship. They had a huge bed of variegated Solomon seal underneath a monster tree, and it was right up against the base. Like, holy cow.
So it was growing no matter what that tree.
This thing has struggled all its life,
okay.
And it was a bed full of variegated Solomon's eel. Small leaves on a stem that's kind of arching up and out. Very small, white, bell-shaped flowers in the springtime, but absolutely indestructible once it gets established.
Is there a specific spot that we want to plant that in? I mean, is that going to be more towards the full sun, or do you like that more in a part? Where would you plant that?
Well, we saw it there in almost kind of medium to deep shade, but it can take quite a bit of sun. In the summertime, the sun will start to ding it pretty good, so I'm not going to say that it's a full sun plant, but on the dappled sun with more of a shade, it'll just kind of keep creeping a little bit more in the sun if it's happy, and then it'll find a space. You cut a bed around it, mulch it a little bit, but that's one that you're going to plant there and have for years and years and years, where a few of the other ones, when they if it gets too wet, you're going to have some root rot.
Yes.
Coral bells are not the easiest thing to grow, but once they're established, you're going to have them for a long time.
Yeah, and you'll have some color in the winter occasionally with those, which is kind of nice.
Oh, yeah.
So there's another one that I really like, and I love to grow it, but sometimes I have a hard time getting it, is the pulmonaria, lungwort.
Yeah.
I love that spotty foliage with the elongated leaf. You get the kind of blue or pink flowers to it. Once again, that's another one I like to plant kind of under a tree where it's getting some sun, but it's getting some shade to it as well. You know, a raised bed where things drain away is really great for that particular plant. That's one I really like.
That's the one that the sun is going to sting that, mm-hmm. so that has to be in some shade.
And when you talk about getting stung, you're talking about when the leaves are getting just kind of burnt on the edges or... You know, they're kind of wilting and turning yellow. And that's what, when Todd talks about that, that's what he's talking about, getting stung on the leaves. So is there any other?
What about ferns?
Oh, I love ferns. Any of those. I mean, we could talk all day about ferns.
Yeah, Japanese painted fern, mm-hmm. Godzilla.
Yep.
That's another good one that's, you know, easy to grow. Once it's established, you're going to have it for years and years.
Mm-hmm.
Ostrich, if you have the area for it, but totally indestructible. There you're coming out with the foliage kind of thing. Lady in Red.
Yes.
Another one. Absolutely. Green leaves and red stems. I mean, that is a great perennial that you're going to have. Foliage,
and
color.
My favorite about ferns, the best thing about ferns, is the deer don't eat them.
Yeah.
You can plant, if you have a deer issue and you've been trying to plant hostas, because, I mean, I'm a hosta nerd. I love hostas, and I love the variegated and the textures. And when we talk about foliages, we could talk about hostas. Which we've already done on our previous show, so I'm not going to bring it up again now other than to tell you they're beautiful. But if you have deer, you can't have hostas. Where with the ferns, it doesn't matter. I mean, if you have deer, they're going to be fine.
Same thing with the hookeras and hookerellas mm-hmm. and all that. Best thing about them is the deer are going to leave them alone.
So let's continue this talk just for a second, and we'll talk about some shrubs, like plants. Even if they're bigger, smaller, once again, I'm coming at you, and I'm like, hey, What would you recommend? I'm looking for something really unique. What would you steer me towards?
All right. Well, first I'm going to say, do you want an evergreen or you want something that's going to flower?
Let's go with how about if I just say I want a beautiful foliage?
All right. You want a beautiful foliage? How big is the plant going to be? Okay. Here's, you know, that's what I start asking to kind of narrow it down a little bit.
Okay.
One of the ones that we grow and sell a lot of is spilled wine Wajila.
Oh, I love that
purple foliage, a little bit low. Lends itself to the front or the medium in the border. But when I'm doing designs, you know, my quick draw McGraws at the shop, that's one I can always put in there. It's easy to take care of.
Hardy.
It's hardy.
Yeah, yep. It's a really, really good one. I love that one. I love the trumpet-like flower with, you know, that kind of reddish rose color. I think it's a beautiful plant. I think that you can't go wrong with that.
It is going to flower, but you've got it there for its purple foliage. And it's a great color to play off of with your annuals and perennials.
Absolutely.
So when I'm looking at, you know, a shrub that is going to be foliage and maybe a little bit flowering here and there, I'm looking at, okay, what colors am I going to play off? Your Citronella hookera.
Yes.
Oh, playing off of that is the gold great combo
the
that I'll use.
Gorgeous.
Yep.
Yep.
Any of the hookeras and that kind of thing would work really well. What about something a little bit taller? Ginger wine nine bark.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Fall color on that is outstanding as well.
Yep.
Once again, you mix some of your golds or your yellows kind of with that, and it just really stands out. Now, both of those are going to be a little more towards the sun to full sun type plants that you're talking about. So, you know, another one that I really like, and it gets rather large, is the dappled willow.
Yeah.
The Nishiki willow. I love that plant.
You got to watch out for this.
It gets big. So you got to have some space for that one. But the unique foliage is really quite interesting.
Yeah. It gives you two or three different looks throughout the year. So, you know, if you don't like this look, whack the heck out of it. Wait a couple weeks. It'll give you a totally different.
It's kind of like the weather in Cincinnati. All you got to do is wait about 10 seconds, and then all of a sudden it'll be different. So, but, yeah, if you guys want to have any join in our conversation, you got something you want to add that's your favorite flower or your favorite shrub or something foliage that you want to share with every of all our listeners, feel free to call in or hit us up on Facebook. But when we come back, Tony had put on our Facebook page our segment, What Plant Is It? So if you're at a spot where you can get to our Facebook page, check it out. Also, remember, make sure you like our Facebook page. And when we come back, we're going to find out, what plant is it?
What plant is it?
Welcome back to In and Around the House. And we are enjoying our conversation with Todd Batens from Batens Nursery today. And Todd, thanks for joining us again. We appreciate you coming in and sharing your wealth of knowledge with us and our listeners.
Yep, thanks.
So, and guys, if you're looking for somebody, especially in the Northern Kentucky area, he's out on Frogtown Road, and we're going to get more information from him as well throughout the show. But just a great garden center, wealth of knowledge, super intelligent and knowledgeable employees, and Todd's just one of those guys. If you got a question, he's going to help you get the answer, and he's going to give you the right answer, even if you don't want to hear it. He's going to give you the right answer because he wants you to be successful. So, but when we were going into the break, we were put out on our Facebook page, and it was our segment, What Plant Is It? And we did have some correct answers. We had Judy and Sean and Carrie, and then also Karen, my good friend Karen, got this right, and it is a pilea, and I'm going to butcher this one up, Todd, so a peppermioides.
Peppermioides.
Peppermioides. So, because I did not know this. It's something I did learn, that there's like 600 different types of pilea, first of all. It's a very popular plant for that part, but this one specifically is known as the Chinese money plant, and it is an indoor plant. It is very easy to grow.
Really easy to grow.
Yes.
Loves the shade. To me, it looks like, you know, how a Brussels sprout has a stem and you got all your Brussels. It looks like a Brussels sprout on fireworks. It just went up and exploded. Big, long stems and a flat leaf. Another name for it is a UFO plant.
Yep.
Friendship plant, because it's easy to propagate and give to your friends. It's like friendship bread, the Amish friendship bread, you know.
Yep, because you can share this one. It's easy to split.
Yeah.
You know, once you kind of get the little shoot and the little growth, it's kind of like a little kid hanging on to mom. You leave them there for a few weeks, and then you just take a good sharp knife, and you can actually split this, and you can share it with a friend. And like you said, it's also known as the pass-it-on plant because it's easy to share. And even though it's attached to mom, once you get a good knife and you split that particular plant, you can propagate this one very easily. The only thing is, it's Japanese or the Chinese money plant. There's never any money on it.
No,
that's terrible. I mean, I thought Tony had something really good here.
That's how it is.
Yeah, that's the way it is. But this one also, it likes indirect sunlight. It doesn't like to be baked in the sun. So this is a good house plant. As long as it's in a bright room, it'll be perfect. It's really low maintenance. It does like to be kept a little bit moist, but it needs to be well drained.
Yep. So well drained. Here's the other thing too on some house plants. Some people will experience burnt edges this time of year and that kind of thing. Well, most of these are tropical plants and they want more sun, but here what are we in?
Right.
Short days,
yep.
Very low light conditions. So many people are coming in and saying, "What's wrong with my plant? You know, this doesn't look good." A couple times this week people came in and say, "Well, look at your lawn. Look at everything. Nothing wants to grow this time of year."
No.
Wait it out, and it'll be all right.
Yeah, but this is a pretty neat plant. I did not know this. Tony actually shared this with me. Apparently, when they first came out, they were very expensive. Like a small plant might even have cost up to $100. But they've definitely come down in price. Not the easiest to find, but really an interesting plant, and it's one you're going to keep for a while. It's pretty easy to grow. As long as it's in the right spot, you're going to have it for quite a while.
Yeah, I think the reason why it isn't out worldwide, but it probably will be shortly, or it is becoming. You know, it came from China. A plantsman from the Netherlands brought it to the Netherlands, mm-hmm. and it's very easy to find in the Netherlands because it was the French implant.
Right.
Easy to get around.
You just shared
but
it.
It stayed there for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's starting to become a little bit more readily available, but for a long time it was not.
Right. And houseplants in general, I think, are just becoming a little more popular. And I don't really mess with them with our garden center because we're really set up more for the landscaping side of things. But this is a really neat plant. And if you want some greenery to have all winter long, it needs to be inside. It's not going to survive outside. It is definitely going to get blasted with cold temperatures, and it will die. But you just bring it in, put it in a pot. You can kind of even set this in a pot that's solid as long as it's not sitting in water.
Right.
So
the pot size on so many of these tropical plants that we use as indoor plants, they don't require a big pot and really grow better in a restricted root space.
Right.
So, you know, they'll do just fine in a small area, kind of a light window. You can move it around if you have the ability to move it from window to window, but it'll start to wake up here shortly. You'll see a little bit more, you know, new growth coming out in the springtime. The Pilea is a pretty neat one.
It's a neat plant. So, and definitely make sure you keep up with us on our Facebook page because every week we're going to try to post what plant is it. And we love to have our listeners kind of dig in and give us their take on what they think it is. And we know that there's a lot of great listeners and smart listeners that do this gardening as a hobby. And some of them could probably make a living at it because they're so smart at it. So, you know, we love for you to keep up with us, and this is definitely one you should look for. But we are going to take another quick break, and when we come back, we're also going to then jump into our plant of the week. So stick with us. This is B105, In and Around the House with Tony Works. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works on B105, and our good friend Todd Baton from Baton's Nursery is sitting in with us today, hey. And we have just had a ball, but, you know, we've got another few minutes here, and I want to talk to you about our plant of the week. Now, Tony makes fun of me because I love this plant, but I love the Buddleia, the butterfly bush.
What is not to like?
He makes fun of me because he says I always talk about it, but it's one of my favorites because when we have that, especially a hot summer, man, these things are blooming all summer long.
Give me a plant that is going to be tough as nails, easy to grow, quick to establish, gives you a whole color array of flowers, and it comes back every year without fail.
Yeah, and
all
it's
right. Tony,
it's not going to cost you $100. You know,
no.
It's just going to cost you the same as every other shrub.
You cut it back one time a year,
mm-hmm.
bounces right back, very easy to grow.
So the butterfly bush has so many different varieties, much like everything we've talked about today.
And different heights.
Yeah, different heights. So some of my favorites, and Tony has his, which we'll get into in a minute, but is the Lo and Behold series that came out a few years ago. And that was Blue Chip, Ice Chip, Lilac Chip, and Purple Haze. Now, the two that I really wanted to go with was Purple Haze and Blue Chip, because those are some of the ones that I found that I had the best success with. Now, the cool thing about Blue Chip is the flower is much shorter. It's a small little, almost like a little snub flower compared to your Purple Haze, which is that elongated traditional butterfly bush flower, which is probably 6 inches long. But I love the color that you get all summer long.
Yeah. You don't always have to have a big, huge, monstrously full flower.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Lo and Beholds, and you got Blue Chip Jr. too.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Which is an even smaller one. But a blue flower out of a plant, that doesn't happen very often.
No, it doesn't.
But blooms all season long. And what are we missing the most of? Attracts the butterflies,
yep.
Brings movement in all the time. So it's a really cool thing.
And it works. Because I'm sure you see this at the garden center, too, with the butterfly bush. You have them in the garden center, the butterflies are there.
Oh, yeah.
They're there. They're there all the time.
You see a customer with a kid, and you go over to that, and you just hang there for a second while you're talking, and then here comes a monarch coming in. So right on cue.
Absolutely. Now, have you seen the Pugster series?
Yeah, we started getting the Pugsters in last year and last spring. So we were able to get those in. I've got some of those ordered to grow for myself this year.
Mm-hmm.
It's a PW, a proven winners kind of plant.
Yep. We always say PW. That's the, just we shorten it in our industry, but it's called proven winner. And I do that all the time. I say
and
PW.
For a reason. Yeah. You know, usually they always have the very best plants of all, but the color combination. On the Pugster, you've got, lo and behold, you got Pugster series, and then you've got the Miss series, the Miss Molly, Miss Violet, and that's a little bit taller one. But the Pugster has a big, huge flower on several different colors, very showy flower. Instead of lo and beholds are going to be tons of flowers, but slightly smaller.
Right.
Pugster's big, huge, fat, usually about 8 inches to a
they're
foot
big.
Long.
I was going to say they're really long flowers like the traditional butterfly bush.
Still a smaller statured plant that's only going to be about 2, 2.5, maybe 3 foot tall.
Right. And that's what's kind of nice about some of these smaller ones is you can put them in the landscape and they don't overgrow the area. They tend to stay contained.
Or contained. You can put that in a container, too, and it'll still show all summer long in a container.
Do you ever use any of the old-fashioned ones like Dark Knight that got huge? Do you ever still sell any of those, or are you kind of done with those?
Kind of done.
Yeah.
I'll order one in here and there, but they're too big, long, and gangly, and it was just about the death of the butterfly butterfly bush plant. People didn't want it. It would look crazy. You could not fit that anywhere in the landscape. Now we can draw, you know, in the landscape, in the front, in the medium, or in the back.
Right.
It can fit anywhere in the full sun, tough as nails, easy to grow.
Likes
the
it
combination
dry
of colors.
Too.
Yeah.
Really likes it dry. So if you want a low maintenance shrub or you got something where you're fine and you can't get anything to grow because it tends to die out from being drought, I think you could try one of these. You might have pretty good success.
Yeah. What is not to like, Tony?
Yeah, I think it's a good one. So, but, you know, a funny story. I have a customer out by us on the east side, and she had the Dark Knight forever. And she used to bring a picture in because I didn't believe her. And it got all the way up to the second story. We measured it at 17 feet tall because she wouldn't cut it back.
Mm-hmm.
But the only bad thing was she lost it 1 year when we had that really almost blizzard-like a few conditions a few years ago. And she lost it because that's the only drawback to the butterfly bush is if it gets really cold, especially if you don't have a good mulch on it, could have a little dieback. But 9 times out of 10, you just cut it back and let it come. So
what I do with mine is I wait for the leaves to start coming out to tell me how far back it actually died back.
Yes.
Then I've got my choice on whether I want a small, medium, or large plant out of that.
Like the knockout roses we talked about earlier in the show, we're cutting those back to a foot almost no matter what. But the butterfly bush, you got to wait, see what survived, and then clean it up. So it's a little bit later term. So, Todd, well, we appreciate you coming in and spending time with us and sharing your knowledge. And why don't you, before you go, can you give us some of your contact information?
Well, we're out on Frogtown Road. It's only 13 miles south of the river, so we're really close to, you know, a lot of the population. We've got a great garden center. We grow 17 houses of all annuals and perennials. We do our own container trees, shrubs, things that we can't grow fast enough. I have to buy in.
Sure.
But we pride ourselves in being the grower. So if you come to me, I'm going to know the question almost all of the time, and if I don't have the answer, I will find it for you. But being a grower, we've seen a lot, and
sure,
we can probably help you grow whatever you
want. And they can reach you through your Facebook page.
Facebook
or
page is always active.
Yep.
Steve and Darlene do a great job on keeping up with that.
And what's that website that you guys have as well? Because you got a great web page. What's that? How would they find that?
BaetensNursery.com. BaetensNursery.com.
And then give us your phone number before you go as well.
859-384-GROW. That's 859-384-4769.
Well, Todd, I really appreciate you coming in, sharing your information with us, and getting to know our listeners. And I encourage our listeners to get out to Baetens Nursery and just go see the garden center, see what they have to offer, because they do a great job. They're a wealth of information. And you're just not going to find a guy who's going to know more than Todd. So, Todd, thanks again for coming in.
All right, thanks.
Well, when we get back, our good friend Jason from Herman Services is in, and I've got some questions for him. So, and there's some really cool things out there. I know he's got some things he wants to add as well. If you want to be a part of our conversation or you have some questions about plumbing, you'll definitely want to hit us up and listen to that. So stick with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House. And hope you're having a great morning, because we are here at B105 Studios, and our good friend Jason with Herman Services is in with us. And welcome back, Jason. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Man, it's good to have you back. I always learn something when you're in, Because there's a lot of things out there that can go wrong with plumbing, isn't there?
There is, and I enjoy coming in and talking to you guys about it.
Well, it's funny. I shouldn't say it's funny, but our listeners will come in and they'll find me and they'll find Tony, mm-hmm. and they kind of say the same thing. They're like, "Man, I like his voice," and they always learn something from Jason when he's in there. So, but for some of our listeners that may not know about Herman Services, why don't you tell a little bit about your business?
I'm the third generation of the Hermans, and my grandfather started the business in 1968. He started the business as plumbing only, and it just kind of grew from there. We did a lot of new construction, and we did all the service work for Northwest Schools when we started out. And then over the years, we got more and more on the service side, and we found that that's what we're really good at. And we just started increasing our service side. And then a few years later, we picked up heating and air conditioning, probably in the early 90s.
Sure.
And then a few years after that, like right in the beginning of the 2000s, we picked up electric also.
Oh, wow.
So we're still...
You run a lot of crews then, aren't you?
We do. We have 15 trucks out on the road all together. And we're probably 90% service oriented. We do residential service, commercial service. We do HVAC replacements, electric services, panel replacements, and then just anything plumbing oriented.
So whatever anybody needs. Now, you service the whole tri-state area. Do you guys stick with this area, a certain spot? Where are you guys at?
We're most of our service comes from Ohio, but we do work in Indiana and Kentucky too.
Okay.
We try to stay within the loop, but we're slowly. Getting outside the loop too.
Well, when you do a good job, people want you. That's the way it works.
And a lot of our guys dispatch from home,
mm-hmm.
So they just call into the shop, and they might already be out on the east side.
And so somebody calls, send them out.
And it's not like we're driving clear across town to get there. A lot of times we got somebody right there, anyways.
Well, you kind of sound a lot like I'm a third generation, and our business mm-hmm. started in 1964. And it was with my grandfather, so we have a lot in common with that stuff. So. We've had all this cold weather, and I think we had you on before we got into the new year. You know, we were talking about some things and, you know, what potential problems might be. But I'll tell you what, with the cold weather, there's been some issues, hasn't there?
We've already had a lot of cold spells and cold enough to freeze pipes. We had a lot of frozen pipe calls. But the one issue that we run into is hose faucets. They have the frost-free hose faucets. I tend to call them frost-resistant.
And that's the key, because I had one in my house, and I accidentally left the hose attached.
That's all it takes.
And it busted.
Yeah.
And I was smart enough to realize that I did it before, so I got it fixed before I turned everything on.
Yeah.
But I know it busted because it was shot.
Yeah, and we'll have for them to freeze, basically the way they're designed is a frost-free or frost-resistant hose faucet. They're between 8 and 12 inches long. And the washer is inside the house in the warmth of the house and the handle's on the outside of the house. That way, when you shut it off, you're shutting the water off inside the house in the warmth. And then the water that's left in that 8 to 12-inch tube drains out to the outside.
Which is when you shut the faucet off, you still see a little water draining through, which is a good thing.
Yeah, but... when you leave a hose on or sometimes even a little adapter, that'll hold that water in there, and that water can freeze and break that hose faucet. If they're installed incorrectly, a lot of times we'll have people where they took the hose off and they did everything right, but that hose faucet was installed and it has the pitch backwards.
So it's
holding water in there and it'll freeze and break. But the problem arises in the spring when people start turning the faucets on and start using them. So this thing froze and broke, you know, December 19th or whatever else, but you didn't use it until, you know, it's 65, 70 degrees.
Yeah, you're
outside.
Out this spring and you're going to pressure wash the lawn, the driveway or wash the car, you know, and you run your water for 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah, and that's the call. That's the call that we get. And inevitably, every year I get at least one person that calls and they call and they're like, you know, it was nice out. I was outside. I washed both cars. I squirted down the driveway, the sidewalk, the porch, and I started washing all this stuff. And then 4 hours later, they walk down in their basement and there's water everywhere. And it's done a lot of damage.
And what's always stored on the walls? There's always storage of you got your you know, whatever, your old pictures or whatever, and it's all ruined.
When I was out running service, I always made it a point when I was in somebody's basement to just look around, notice my surroundings, and I always suggested to my customers to not store valuable things in cardboard boxes in the basement. You know, it's so sad to see something like that happen, but then realize that somebody's family picture or some irreplaceable family album was in a cardboard box in that area, and their stuff got ruined. And the Tupperwares are just too cheap now not to invest in them.
Yeah, I mean, just do it just that way. If it gets wet, at least it's protected somewhat.
But the thing to do with those hose faucets is always be precautious when the first time you use them in the year. So, you know, if you're home alone, then run the hose faucet for a few minutes and then turn it off and then go down in the basement, check around that area.
Yeah.
Make sure there's no signs of leakage or water. If there's someone else home, when you get started to do that, have them go down in the basement for the first 4 or 5 minutes that you're running that water and just double check. It takes a few seconds. And it could save you from tons and tons of grief.
Yeah, tons of issues. Now, are those always made of copper?
Most, I have not seen frost-free or frost-resistant hose faucets made of anything except for copper at this point. So I'm assuming they'll find a way to make them out of plastic.
Just to make them cheaper?
Yeah, but as of right now, I have not seen one yet.
And how many of those are you seeing this on a pretty regular basis right now, or is it still a little early and this is what you're preparing people for?
We haven't seen a single call yet. I don't think it's been warm enough. Yeah. And it's going to get really cold tomorrow and this week, so there's a whole other opportunity for them to freeze.
Right.
So it'll probably be a few weeks before, you know, usually around the 60s when it hits about 60 degrees on a regular basis, we start to get those calls. And like I said, a lot of times it's just really, it's really sad for what got ruined.
What happened when the old houses were a little older and they didn't have that technology? What do people do then if they've got, were they draining them? Do you replace them with the new frost-free? What happens if there's an old house and it's just got the faucet and it just, there's the water?
Well, back then they would just have, we called it a boiler drain or a silcock or whatever that was mounted on the outside. But they almost always had a valve on the inside.
Gotcha.
And you would shut that valve off, and then it would have a little fitting on the side of it called a bleeder.
Okay.
And you would loosen up that bleeder that would let air into the system, and then you'd open up the outside, and all that water would drain out.
Okay.
And then you just had to do that every year. And on top of that, we would use thicker copper back then, too.
Gotcha. So it would handle the cold a lot better.
The thicker the copper and softer the copper, the more it can handle the cold.
Gotcha.
So it wasn't near the issue back then as it is now.
Do you still see any houses with those old systems that you replace pretty frequently?
Yeah, we see a lot of them. And sometimes we'll have to take an old frost resistant out. Say somebody adds a deck to their house.
Mm-hmm.
We'll take that frost resistant one out and we'll put a valve inside, and then we'll run the copper pipe up the wall on the outside so that they can have a faucet on their deck that's usable. And they just need to know that they need to
drain it.
Yeah, they have to drain that down because you actually have water pipe running on the outside of the house.
Well, excellent. So we're going to take a short break right now, and when we come back, I've got some questions, and I know Jason wants to talk about a few other things as well. And if you want to be part of our conversation or you have something that you want to talk about with Jason, just give us a call at 749-B105. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony Works. Tony is out today. He actually was sleeping in today, so it's good for him. So we're glad he got to do that because today was an early day, wasn't it, Alex?
No, it was a very early day.
Yeah. So
I didn't know he was going to be sleeping in. Did you know this?
I did know he was going to be sleeping in because usually I don't know where he's at. Usually he goes on secret assignment, and I'm not allowed to say where he's at.
Right.
And I'm still – I'm not saying it because he said he might call in. He said he was going to get up in the 8 o'clock hour, and he might call in. So I was kind of hoping he would because what he's doing, him and his wife, they're doing something pretty neat.
I think it'd
be pretty cool to share with our listeners.
It is something cool, something I've always wanted to do.
Yeah, me too. And if he doesn't call in, then we'll have to wait and share it next week because I'm not going to spill the beans. I'm going to let him do it.
Nope.
So, but our good friend Jason from Herman Services is in, and you know what a great company. He's a third generation customer service throughout the tri-state area. They're gonna treat you right. They're not here just to sell you products. They're here to take care of your needs and be as honest and upfront as possible. And that's what I love about your company. But there's some other big issues out there that you're having right now. And I always joke because I call them dude wipes.
No.
You know, the wipes where you're wiping clean. Maybe they're moist towelette type things. And they say they're flushable.
They do. The packages say, you know, there's so many products that are claiming that they're flushable nowadays. As a plumber, I can tell you, if it's not toilet paper, then don't flush it.
Yes.
You know, years and years ago, you know, we had problems. Our biggest issue was some feminine products and stuff like that here mm-hmm. and there. But these wet wipes have become so popular now. And they say, you know, 90% of them say flushable on the boxes or the bags.
And 90% of them aren't.
They're exactly the same as the ones that are not flushable. They're
right.
The same makeup. I don't understand why they can write that they are flushable on these packages, but they are not.
So why wouldn't, if I'm a homeowner and I'm using them because I want to be clean,
mm-hmm.
why wouldn't I flush? I mean, why not? It says flushable. What problems would I have?
So what we're running into, and especially lately, is we've been running with a lot of mechanical pump systems where the sewage has to be pumped out to the sewers. It does not matter if it's a high-powered grinder pump that's supposed to grind things up and send it out, or a large-capacity ejector pump that has a impeller and can pass things as big as 4-inch solids. Either way, they're catching these wipes and they're destroying these pumps.
Right.
And these pumps can run from, you know, $600, $700 pump to as much as an $8,000 pump.
Wow. That's an expensive wipe you use.
Not easy to replace. And sometimes you got to get the pit pumped out first. And I've ran into cases where we had to use a pumper truck to suck them all out of the pit to get them out of there just so we could figure out that, oh, by the way, your pumps are destroyed too.
Right.
And it's just become such a problem, especially with pumps. We've also had the problem with people with septic tanks. They're building up in these septic tanks. They don't necessarily float or sink to the bottom, so they pass through the septic tank in the flowways, and they cause all kinds of issues with those systems. And some of these newer septic systems cost upwards of $30,000 and $40,000,
right?
And these wipes just destroy them.
Yeah, a few wipes destroy them. So, what about like a homeowner? What if, you know, they were putting in the plumbing, and I don't even know if this is possible because this is your expertise, not mine. What if there was a snag inside where it was kind of together, and one of these wipes got caught halfway down a drain or something?
That's all it takes. It just takes a imperfection in the plumbing system. It could be a burr on a piece of brand new plastic pipe,
mm-hmm.
or it could be a root in an older pipe or a separation. And when a wipe goes down there, it catches on that area, and now that area has become worse, and then the next wipe will catch on that one, and then next wipe, and the next wipe. And then by the time it becomes a sewage clog, and it's causing a noticeable problem in your house, that pipe could be, depending on the length of it, could be filled with thousands of them. And it just becomes a real hassle and a real problem for us to get out, and it becomes really expensive.
Well, you may say, well, I only used it once. Well, then you use it once again, and mm-hmm. it may not happen that day. It's the mm-hmm. buildup, it sounds like.
It's the buildup that causes the problem.
Now your pipe from being a 4-inch pipe turns mm-hmm. into about a 1-inch pipe.
Oh, yeah. And those wipes, they catch the toilet paper that goes down. You know, we have the toilet paper now that takes longer to break up because, you know, some of them are
8-ply.
Yeah. Like I said, 8-ply, it's got the consistency of a silk sheet, which is nice to use, but you know, it takes that stuff longer to break down in the sewer pipes. And when you have a wipe catching it in a spot where you don't want it,
mm-hmm.
that stuff builds up too. And then it doesn't let the water get to it, and then it won't break down.
So
it just adds to the problem.
When you're cleaning these things out, this is where we also want to bring it up because it's going to cost you a ton to clean it out. Mm-hmm. I know you guys have that super jet that really blows them out, but the old-fashioned way, if the homeowner's going to try to do it himself, they might kind of clean it out, and it's not mm-hmm. going to clean out.
It's really difficult to clean them out with a cable machine.
Mm-hmm.
The wipes tend to wrap all around the cables. Sometimes your cable will go right through it and make a hole and some of the water goes down. Then you pull your cable back and everything moves 3 inches forward and clogs right back
up.
And
you gotta do
it again. Our solution has been to use high pressure, trailer jetter. We actually bought a piece of equipment that we pull behind a truck, and it uses 5,000 pounds of pressure and 12 gallons a minute of water, and we have to run that through there and just blast them out.
And didn't you say in the break that there was a pump and it was like $8,000 that you guys just had to replace because of these wipes?
Yeah, it was a 17-foot deep pit with two pumps in it, and it ruined both pumps. And we had to pump and clean the pit. It's ruined both pumps. The pumps have to be custom made, and those pumps are designed to discharge 4-inch solids.
Right.
But it cannot deal with these wipes.
Well, what's amazing is, you know, it can't do that little wipe. It can do everything else. But the expense that these things are costing homeowners, or potentially costing homeowners, it could be thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars just because it says it's flushable when it's not.
Yeah, and I don't think they should be allowed to write flushable on these packages. I know there's municipalities all over the world that are suing these companies, trying to get them to take responsibility for the damage it's done, get them to take the wording off the packages, but they cannot be flushed.
Well, if homeowners see it, I mean, we automatically assume just because it says it, I guess we should assume it's like the internet, you know?
Yeah.
Just because it's on there doesn't mean it's right.
Yeah. And you know, some people will go through the trouble to find the package that says flushable on it.
Right.
And there's really not much difference between the ones that say flushable and the ones that don't. They're pretty much the same product.
Pretty much the same thing. So, well, we're going to take another quick break. But when we come back, I've got a couple questions about some hot water heaters that I want to bring up. And I want to see what the answer is and some of the different options out there. So if you want to be part of our conversation, you can kind of find us on Facebook and put us a question there, and we'll try to get Jason to answer it as well. Or you can give us a call at 749-B105. This is In and Around the House with Tony Works. We'll be right back. There we go. A little Born in the USA. Thank you, Alex, for putting that one on. I appreciate that.
You like that?
Yeah, I do like that. And I like our bumper music.
I like the bumper music. It sounds good.
Yeah, it makes
sense. I tried to do a good job for you.
Yeah, bumper music is, I find bumper music to be very interesting because it depends on the mood I'm in, you know. But like when it's sunny out and the flowers are all in season, we get in season, I'm going to be pretty fired up. I want to hear some good music.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes you want to hear the rest of the song, though. That's the only bad side.
I know.
I really wanted to hear the rest of that.
Especially if, you know, they get a little Sweet Home Alabama. That one will kind of get everybody rocking. So. But before we get back talking a little bit with Jason from Herman Services, I do want to bring up for those who are attending the Cincinnati Home and Garden Show that's going on this weekend to stop by our friends at the Pavestone booth and check out, because they are giving away and they're teaming up with Margie from Bushelman Supply to give away a patio, a seating wall, and a fire pit again this year. So I don't know if my good friend Danny Lawson is going to be down there from Pavestone. I know Margie won't be, but she is also participating and being in the contest. So make sure you see our good friends at Pavestone and sign up. Maybe you get a chance to win a patio. So that's not something you install, is it?
No, it's not. Patios. But I do a lot of plumbing work out at Pavestone.
Oh, do you?
It's a really neat plant, and it's a dirty plant.
Because
thinking about making
dust.
Bricks.
Yeah, they're making
stuff like that.
Concrete dust is really bad.
Like when you think about going there to do plumbing work, you're already dirty.
Yes.
So, but it's really neat how they make the bricks, and this time of year they're probably catching up on their processes, getting ready for spring.
Oh yeah.
So they have a whole yard that is probably full of brand new bricks ready to go out.
And it is huge. And if you guys are looking for some different Pavestone pavers or wall stone, definitely stop out and see Margie at Bushelman Supply. She has all the knowledge that you need. Their customer service is absolutely outstanding, and their selection is huge. So great people at both locations. But when we went to the break, Jason, you know, I have a gas, I think they're gas-powered hot water heaters. But there's all these new technologies and everything coming out. But, you know, Tony was really interested in the tankless water. How do you feel about things? What do you recommend to people here?
I try to get a picture of the people's situation and what's going on with their hot water. A lot of people base their life and their daily activities around their hot water heater, and they don't even realize it.
It is very important. I mean, everybody likes a hot shower.
But, you know, when you have a tank-style water heater, you, in most cases, you can't take 4, 5, 6 showers right in a row. So if you have a larger family, you know, these three people got to take a shower at night.
Yeah.
These three take one in the morning. That person that takes that last shower is the one that really has to hurry. So a tankless water heater is really good in that situation. A tankless water heater will create endless amounts of hot water.
Because it just heats it as it's going through it, right?
It does, and it'll just keep making hot water. And depending on the incoming water temperature, it can make that hot water. Like in our area, we plan on a 70-degree temperature rise because that's about what we need right now.
Okay.
And they'll create about 5.5 gallons per minute, which is more than enough to run on a lot of times 2 showers at the same time.
Sure.
So it works really good if you need it for your lifestyle. The biggest issue that I run into is people are interested in them because they want to save money on their monthly bill. And what I have found, or what we have found, is that no one that has ever installed a tankless water heater has ever saved any money.
Gotcha.
Because once everybody in the house realizes that you can take as long a shower as you want and it's not going to hurt the last person,
yeah,
then guess how long they take a
shower. My kids would love, and I blame my son more than my mm-hmm. daughter. Mm-hmm. My son takes the longest showers. It seems mm-hmm. like he's out there an hour.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
And I think we have a 50-gallon tank, and which mm-hmm. will do a family of four. If I kind of stretch mine out, like I'm always the last one.
Yeah.
You know, I'll stretch mine out and I'll wait an hour. And then it's usually
well, if you're waiting an hour with a gas water heater, it's almost recovered
by
then.
Yes, it has. So
that works out pretty good. Mm-hmm. But if you guys were all getting ready for an important event and had a person staying over or something like that, then, you know,
that's going to be tough.
You'd be setting an egg timer on people's showers.
Yep.
So a tankless is really good in that situation. Like I said, tank style water heaters are still great water heaters, and the energy efficiency between a tank water heater and a tankless water heater, I think some of the stuff and the figures they use is it's government figures, and I don't really find them to be that accurate.
Right.
From the customers that we've installed tankless for, we have never met a customer that saved any money on their energy bills putting one in.
Do you recommend usually to a homeowner, if they have a electric one, put electric one back? If they have a gas one, put a gas one back? Do you usually go that route, or how do you handle that?
Gas water heaters have a higher recovery rate.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have gas and there's a gas one there, we generally, you know, replace a gas with a gas. A lot of people that have electric water heaters, they don't have gas available.
Gotcha.
So in that case, we're going with electric water heater.
But they've come a long way too in the last 10 years.
They have their tankless option. I would avoid it.
The electric tankless option, Jason, same for
the technology's just not there yet.
Okay,
so try to avoid that one. But they've also, the government's also reduced our tank capacities over the last couple of years.
For water conservation?
It's actually energy because
energy,
they're saying you're heating that same water over and over again. So the water heaters have more insulation around them. And the downside is somebody that had an 80-gallon electric, you can't get that anymore.
Right.
So
50 is about the biggest, or 65?
60 is the biggest that you can get now. But 50 is the most common size. And we actually have a tempering device that we'll put on top of the water heater.
Okay.
And you turn the water heater up to 160 degrees, and then it mixes it at the top and gives you your 120, 125 degree water. And it'll make that 50-gallon water heater produce hot water like 180 or 80-gallon water.
Wow. That's a big difference, especially if you have a big family.
It does work. It's another device that you have to maintain, right. But if electric is the only option you have, it works out really good. We can also put that on a gas water heater, but it works out really well.
My hot water heater has one of those expansion tanks.
Yes.
Right up beside that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's that for?
So if there's a check valve in your plumbing system, and some municipalities put check valves in their meters, any kind of water softener has a check valve in it.
Mm-hmm.
A pressure reducing valve has a check valve in it, or a backflow preventer is actually a check valve. And it creates a closed plumbing system. And when you heat water, the pressure rises, kind of like a tea kettle.
Okay.
You know, when you boil that water, you get the whistle noise, and mm-hmm. it's from pressure building up. Well, when you have a closed plumbing system, there's nowhere for that pressure to go. So that expansion tank, it has a rubber bladder in it, and it's filled with air, and it's supposed to be properly pressurized to the water pressure. And then when you heat water, that it compresses that air in that tank, and it absorbs that extra pressure that the water heater's building up. So it's very important that it's there. If it's not there, and it should have been there, then it'll cause your relief valve, which is the safety device on your water heater, to weep water out.
Gotcha.
And when that water weeps out, then it causes the mechanism inside that safety device to corrode, and it can corrode in the closed position. And then when you need that safety device, it won't open, right. And that's really
Is that bad. Something that should be replaced every time you replace a tank? More often than that, how often should you replace that?
I'm finding that the expansion tanks, if they're properly pressurized, they should last 10 to 12 years, which is about the average life of a tank.
You think it's that long on tanks?
And we're still getting about, they depending say on the that. Water quality, we're still getting water heaters. I'm saying like 12 years is our average.
I think mine was 10 or 11, and yeah. I went on vacation, and I came back, and I found some leaking.
Do you live out in, you're in Amelia?
I'm in Kentucky.
In Kentucky. Yeah, it depends on the quality of the water that you're getting in Hamilton County.
Yeah.
We're getting 12 years easy out of a water heater.
Oh, that's good.
Out in Claremont County and Butler County, it's generally a little bit less.
Gotcha.
And then we do some work in Kentucky, but not a ton, so I don't have a good reference point.
That's a lot of good information, and I think our homeowners definitely can get to a quality person like you who's going to give them that information. But, you know, if we're out there looking for tanks, you know, that helps me at least know, because I've always thought, do I want a tankless one? And last time I just went with the old one, and it's about 7 years old. So I know I got about another 4 or 5 years, and I think I'll just go back with the same one I had. Yeah. It works great.
I mean, I would sit down and think about the difference in cost. And then, you know, is my family running their life around this water heater, or should we spend the extra money so that we don't have to run
in
our
five
life
more years? I could very easily be an empty nester. So I'm kind of heading down where it's just my wife and I. So we have a tank bigger than we need.
It's hard to justify spending that extra money on a tankless water heater in that situation.
Well, we're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some maybe new technologies that are out there in the plumbing world. Some I can't believe are out there and people actually are using. And then some I think are really going to be a big benefit to you. So stick with us. We'll be right back. That sounds good right there, Alex.
Sounds like
a little summertime
Cole
music.
Cole Swindell, yeah.
I do love Cole Swindell, you know. I love all the music on B105. So I know we're talking a lot, but I listen to B105 all the time.
We play pretty good music. I'm not going to lie. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Especially you. You were on last night. And I got to listen to you a little bit. And I enjoyed what you played. That was good.
Thank you very much, Bob.
Now, do you ever go in there and just change the music just because you want to play something different that you like? Have you ever done that?
Well,
I'm not going to tell Grover. Grover, don't listen. If
I have a wild hair, if I'm really feeling a song, I'll just go ahead and maybe throw it on there.
Maybe something in there. So, all right, next time I know you're on, I'm going to text you because I got a few favorites that I really like.
All righty, sounds good.
But when we went into break, we're talking to Jason from Herman Services, and you know, I got laughing because there's some funny technology out there. But before we get to that, what are some of the things out there that you're seeing that really might benefit people technology-wise in the plumbing and heating and cooling?
The biggest things technology-wise that I've seen that have been a benefit are Wi-Fi-oriented thermostats. So essentially somebody that's not at home a lot, they travel a lot, we can put a thermostat in and it hooks up to the Wi-Fi of your home and it'll send you alerts if the furnace isn't working. Say you're on vacation in Florida and it'll send you an alert that, hey, your furnace isn't working. And then you realize that it's 20 degrees back home.
Gotcha.
And you can take action before it does damage. And another big one is battery backup sump pump systems. They're starting to improve the technology with those with Wi-Fi now. And the same thing, you could be on vacation, see on the news that it's pouring down rain and we're getting washed out back here. You could log in and check in on that sump pump. It can send you alerts. And they're even to the point now where you could run it through a test cycle if you know it's going to rain and you're out of town and you know it's going to rain the next day and you want to run it through a test cycle while all the plumbing companies are still open for normal business.
Sure.
and you have a friend available that can go over there and check it out.
Well, right now, with the weather we had this winter and the amount of rain we had, my sump pump is running constantly. Mm-hmm. I mean, the water is just flowing, which is good.
Yeah.
That means it's working.
It means it's working.
Well, that's a good thing. But, you know, if you're out of town and you're in Florida or you're in Arizona for 3 or 4 months or even 2 months, mm-hmm. you know, and all of a sudden things go down, that would definitely be a huge benefit.
Yeah. And it's not like, you know, so you can't turn off the drainage.
You know, if you're
going out of town for 2 or 3 months, I would always suggest turning off your water before you leave.
Well, and
you can't turn off your sump pump.
You can't turn off the water getting to the foundation. Yeah. Or if one of your gutters comes loose and all that water is pouring mm-hmm. directly down your foundation, mm-hmm. sump pump may not handle it anyways, but mm-hmm. at least you got the backup to know, hey, wait a minute, I've got this working mm-hmm. and, oh, maybe the electric went out. You know, mm-hmm. so you can usually, most people go out of town, have a family member or a friend that can check the house and get the plumber in. Mm-hmm. But at least you guys would have a chance to fix it before it became a major issue and water sits in your basement for 2 months and you come home to mold and all kinds of problems.
Oh, there's mold is a serious issue, especially in our area. So anytime you got a leakage or something like that, you want to get it taken care of right away. And you want to do everything you can to avoid that flooding situation.
All right. So now what brought this topic up was something that I found was, I thought, absolutely hysterical. And I thought, oh, my gosh, we've really reached first world problems, worse than ever. But it's a smart shower. So you have an app on your phone where you could be sitting in your chair downstairs and you're like, hey, I want to get a shower. Let me turn the shower on now and get it to 103 degrees so in 3 minutes, I can walk upstairs and my shower's ready. I mean, come on. Have you installed any of these yet?
We have not installed one of those yet. I've seen a lot of weird Wi-Fi. They basically want to hook up Wi-Fi to everything.
Yeah.
And some of it is, I just don't see paying the extra money. So in that situation there, I think about all the different things that can go wrong with that.
Oh, me too.
And, you know, the amount of what it's going to take to service that and, you know, us being a plumber coming out because it's not working right.
Right.
Essentially,
you have to become tech guys now. You have to like, wait a minute, is it in the Wi-Fi part that it's not working or is it in the shower part? Oh, yeah. You know, you guys got a lot to learn too.
It's gonna, and we run into with a lot of this high tech stuff. Our only recourse is to call the 1-800 number and work our way through their tech support
while you're charging hourly.
While we're charging for this,
yeah,
and go through their tech support and have someone that's never even touched one telling us how to fix
it. I just found that, to be honest with you, I don't know, Alex, you're a millennial. You know, what do you think of this?
Well, you know what, that's a. I might. Do you know how to get one? I might need to order one from my own house.
First, you got to mow my grass, then I'll talk to you about that.
My biggest worry about something like that is when something goes wrong with it, the extremes that we'll have to go through to fix it.
Yeah.
But what I'm finding out with a lot of this new technology stuff is no one has the parts for it.
Sure.
So your only recourse is for us to talk to customer service, figure out what part we need to get, and then order that part. And then wait 3 to 4 days for that part to come in. And then it's another trip to put it in. And then it doesn't work again. And then we're back starting the process over, ordering the next part.
Yeah.
And we run into this a lot. We do that a lot.
So we're getting ready to finish up our time here with you today. But I got another couple questions. All these toilets keep dropping the amount of water they're using. And, you know, like I joked with you off air, my mom and dad still have the old ones, and they're like 5 gallons, and it seems like 15 minutes you flush, and it's finally getting everything down. Mm-hmm. But these new, is the technology really keeping up and getting enough water through the system to flush everything or not? What do you think?
When they went from 5 to 3.5 gallons years and years ago, and it was pretty simple. The technology was there. The manufacturers had plenty of warning. When we went from 3.5 gallons to 1.5 gallons, it took the manufacturers 2 or 3 years to catch up to make a toilet that could flush, like just get the water through the toilet. So we've been with 1.5 gallons for over 20 years now. And, the biggest issue that we found is a lot of those older houses, they were designed to have 3 gallons.
Yeah. Like my mom and dad, would they switch it?
You can't switch all the, you have to switch the toilet when you get a new toilet, and you can't really switch the plumbing system under the ground and everything else. So as the toilets get lower and lower, what we're finding is they're having trouble washing the waste out to the sewer.
Gotcha.
And as they go lower, that's my biggest concern. The manufacturers are kind of going lower on their own now.
Right.
Just with water conservation and stuff like that. It's really hard for a 1.2 gallon toilet to work in an older plumbing system.
So you got to flush it a couple times.
Sometimes that's the case. It's safe to go ahead and flush it a couple times. As far as toilets go, they make tons. They make electric toilets now. We do use a lot of pressure assist toilets to solve a lot of problems. They work fantastic. Flush on a gallon and a half of water. Our gravity flush toilet we're using right now, we use a Mansfield Summit. It's made in Ohio in USA.
Mansfield always worked good. At least mine do.
The Summit is a really good, it's a little higher quality line. It's probably one of their higher quality basic toilets. But they tend to flush really well. So
all right,
they're out there.
One last question.
Mm-hmm.
Do you always go with white or do you do colors? You recommend to people?
I'm still old school white and chrome.
There you go.
White and chrome never go out of style.
Can't go wrong.
You know, I've seen, you know, black toilets. You said that you had a friend that has a black toilet.
It's kind of weird with a black toilet. I have to admit, it's kind of weird in there.
Yeah. And now we have the oil rub bronze. And it's like, how long is this going to be a thing?
Yeah.
How long is it going to last? We still run into the old polished brass that was real popular in the 80s. But a lot of that stuff, you know, 10 years down the line with what you're spending remodeling a kitchen or a bathroom,
you need it to
10
last.
Years down the line. I mean, it looks terrible,
right?
Because it's just dated.
Yeah. You think it's really, it's hip and it's cool, but it's just not going to last.
But so, I'm just a white and chrome guy.
Yeah,
it always looks good.
I am too. So. Well, we appreciate you coming in and filling in with us, Jason. Would you do us a favor? Will you give us all your contact information, how to get a hold of you, website, phone number? Give us all that information.
Our website is hermanservices.com, and Herman has two R's and two N's. We always can be reached by phone at 513-SERVICE. It's 737-8423. It spells the word service. We carry a Facebook page. We do Twitter. We've started, we're in the beginning stages of making, YouTube videos for, some small knowledge base, things. So that should be up and running in a few weeks here. And, I think we even have an Instagram page. I don't stay on there.
Man, I'll tell you what,
but
are you doing selfies? Are you taking selfies of yourself all the time?
We have done that. We had a competition. I think it was last year. Where we had a competition with our service techs to get selfies with customers.
There you go.
And they got rewards based on who got the best
cool.
selfies with customers. And it was a lot of fun, and the customers enjoyed it.
Well, that's really cool. Well, Jason, as always, we appreciate you coming in, spending time, taking time out of your busy day to share information with our listeners. And I encourage our listeners to call Herman Services, check out their website. The website's great. It's easy to navigate. You can find out all the information you need. And they do a great job for you, and they will always take care of you. So, Jason, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
I appreciate that. So we're going to take another quick break, and when we come back, Alex and I are going to kind of wrap up the show. And if you have anything you want to add, give us a call at 749-B105. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome to In and Around the House. And, man, Alex, where's these 3 hours gone?
I mean, you know, it goes by so fast. It really does.
It does. It's amazing. And you know, Tony was out today, and I'm going to have to wait. He was going to try to call in. He must not have been able to. So we will get all his information of what he did. And I think our listeners next week tune in. You're going to really – Tony, it was pretty cool what he did. I can't wait to hear about it.
Yeah, no, I'm actually really excited to hear about it. And, it's something, like I said, something I think we've both really wanted to
do. And this show, I mean, it was – there was a lot of information out there. There was the Pilea money plant, which we talked about. Go to our Facebook page and check it out. And, you know, we've had some questions about it. It's really easy to grow.
Yeah, and, you know, I wanted to actually say something about that. Also called the money plant, like you said.
Yep.
I want a millennial, and I hate kind of reverting to that, but I think this plant would really look good in a modern setting in a home.
Oh, yeah.
Like in a living room.
Well, it has that pancake-type leaf to it, which is really flat, and it's got a long stem. but it stretches out a little bit. It kind of has a contemporary type look. It can go anywhere, but it really, it's just a neat plant. And I think houseplants are getting big. If it's something you want to try, it's easy, you know, and it looks good. It looks good against any surface other than maybe green.
Yeah.
You know, if it's against a white wall or a khaki wall or gray, because gray is so popular, it really stands out.
Well, I think with the millennials is that they're really going towards a modern look. That's kind of like what the new trend is in a house now.
This definitely does that.
With a, in a nice modern living room or even, like you said, in the kitchen against a white background, I think the Chinese money plant, I think that looks great.
It is cool, and it does multiply, so you wait for the kind of the babies that are right next to mama. The mother plant, and when they grow, you let them grow for about 2 or 3 weeks. You take a good sharp knife, and you can split it, and you can actually have multiple plants because, you know, it's also known as the plant you pass on because you can actually give one to somebody else. So you can cut the little babies off, kind of get them in some soil, make sure you're in a good soil median, and then give it away to somebody else, and so you can share it. So it's really a cool plant, and you know, this whole show, we kind of filled, there's so much that we talked about. We talked about foliages. We talked about Buddleia, the butterfly bush, as our plant of the week. But, you know, a couple big questions was, what about winter seeding and what about the Fertilome three-step? So if you're out there, you can go ahead and buy your Fertilome three-step. I know a lot of the independent garden centers that advertise on the show are offering little specials at this point that you can save a little bit of money if you buy all three, but you're not going to put it down yet. It's a little early. We want to back that off just a little bit and wait at least till the middle of May, or March, middle of March, to even April 1st. And it all depends on soil temperatures. Mm-hmm. So there's a plant out there called Forsythia. When they bloom yellow, that's when you're kind of looking to put it down because that's going to be the indicator that the soil temperatures are at the right stage for growth to start coming out. And that's when your winter seed or your crabgrass seeds are going to start to germinate. We're doing everything we can to prevent them. So.
Right.
But, you know, if you want to catch up with any of anything we've talked about, you can check us out on our Facebook page. Alex will put up a podcast for you. You can download the B105 app on your phone, and you can go back and listen to past shows as well. And we really encourage all our listeners to get out to our Facebook page and like our Facebook page. It is probably the easiest way for our listeners to connect with Tony and I. And Tony really manages that more than I do, and I know he gets back to people, but we love to hear. So if there's plants that you like and maybe you'd like to hear some more information about, send us a message on Facebook. You know, get it out there. And I know I talked to Alex about this earlier, and he might shoot me for this, but if there's a bumper music, you know, when we say that, that's the music of the intro and kind of when we go to commercial, there's something you want to add to our show, you know, chime in, send us some information. We'd love to play something.
Yeah, send us a message, see what you want to hear, and we'll throw it right on there for
you. Absolutely.
We'd love to do that.
Alex, I appreciate you filling in for Tony today.
Bob, thanks
and
for
being
having
a voice.
Me.
And definitely catch Alex on B105 during the week and at nighttime especially, that you'll hear his lovely voice playing music during the week. And then also, Tony and I will be back next week. So you guys have a great week and happy gardening, and we'll talk to you next week.